This is a short story about a regular guy named Harold, his sticky, pouty situation, and what he does to overcome his ordinary, seeking to become extraordinary. Experience the unstuck satisfaction of Harold's victory in How Harold Got Rid of His Dogs. Go back a few years, probably more than a generation or two, to get a feel for the time. It's hard to say whether or not it's that easy to get a feel for the setting. It is the kind of community where most of anyone's business takes them for half-hour rides over dusty rural roads. Go back south. Harold was born in the Sticks community. He was also born with a disease of mediocrity, he thinks. Harold is rarely happy because of the mediocrity. He makes slight efforts to appear happy sometimes, but he pretty much has the blues. He has them most of the time. He drags the blues around with him like spoiled, hungry dogs demanding attention and food, so he feeds them with a downcast mood and fattens them sassier still with his mediocre feelings. Harold believes his imagination. That's why they hang around. They're always there, sitting on his mind feet, pestering canines, his blues. He often wishes he could shoot them, swift and sure, the way he would for outright vicious dogs. But he can't get himself out from under their pressured compassions long enough. Sometimes he swears he can actually hear them running in a pack, racing through his head, barking, "Harold's got the blues again! Harold's got the blues again!" Harold's hopes for escaping the dogs are daily dashed against his exposed window panes at daybreak before he can even squint into the sun's penetrating rays. Being an innocent victim of his unsatisfied desire to be somebody good at something, he considers himself captive of the disease that way. He is a victim of his victimizer before he groans himself awake. And sure enough, by the time he tosses off the covers, confining his bulky body every morning, he's a captive. The blues dogs are poised, sulking in his mind's bed, pinning his mind feet down, suffocating any thoughts of happy days ahead. Harold gets sympathy from the community ladies when he convinces them he's a victim in need of their supports and understandings, their willingness to let his mediocrity slide right by. He has an accepting, defeated way of doing it that subtly begs their compassions. Besides, when he's with one of the ladies, the blues dog don't have room to be too rowdy, lolling in front of his mind door, waiting for him to give in to them instead of sitting on his mind feet, ruining his mind shoes. It's temporary relief. Harold learned most of what he knows on the dusty rural roads. The blues dog started accosting him as he drove in a sad frame of mind from one job to another. He had given up school learning when he was old enough to quit. He balked internally over subjects like history, science, and language. Math was just addition and subtraction. He just couldn't get good at any of them. After years of driving to work and back on the rural roads, chewing idly on weed stems, then spitting them out of the open window, the blues dogs caught the scent of dejected, unhappy air surrounding him. It didn't take very long for them to form their pack and come yapping at his mind heels. During that time, too, Harold refined a sullen look to match his disease. He unconsciously frowned so much his eyebrows furrowed downward along with his lips. The brooding look stayed with him and combined with his dark hair and darker eyes presented him as some sort of petulant swashbuckler type. As he grew older, his eyebrows grew bushier and his frown became more pronounced, suitable for most things he tried to do. Sticks folks didn't care one way or another what Harold tried to do or if he was happy. Some of them had made it through their own mediocrity, never complaining, never saying a thing about it. A body just worked, that's all. What's happy? Who's happy? they had gotten used to Harold the same way they got used to anything else. If and when he conjured up a simper smirk, then they would turn around to see what the matter was. The ladies, though, loved to look at his unhappy look. They pet his frown for him, almost the same offhand way he accepts presents of the blues dogs ingrained in his imagination. Their attention should make him happy, but he takes them for granted. It's not like inviting tender situations is something he's good at. It's a natural thing. Anybody can make suggestions. The ladies tell him different. They tell him that nobody does average like he does when one or two of them come over to pet his frown. Harold labors his rough construction jobs in and out of the sticks community, and at the end of the day, there are usually a couple of ladies in the cafe available to pet his frown. In turn, some of the sticks men visit the cafe when Harold is in, hoping to maybe get a chance to pet one of the ladies when she is done petting Harold. Time passes this way, with Harold going out to work construction and coming back in to be petted, still spending the majority of his hours and days with the blues dogs. He rationalizes his perceived fate by thinking that it was a god-awful shame that he was born mediocre, unable to do anything about it. He doesn't have what it takes to be somebody good at something, that's all. This time, while traveling back into the sticks community, Harold's mind feet are hurting sore. The blues dogs have been jumping, thumping around on them, nudging each other, nipping and growling like they're onto something, no matter how hard Harold's mind feet struggle to kick them off. By the time he reaches the cafe, Harold is ready to put both pairs of his feet up and sit a long spell. One of the ladies is there, and she slides her coffee cup over to join his on the center high top table. She pets his frown gently and acts like she orders for him every day of her life. Over her shoulder, she calls out to the waitress, "Get Harold and me some fresh coffee. He looks tired because he hasn't heard the news yet." "News? What news?" Harold demands. "Progress, Harold, progress," the waitress declares, pouring his coffee into a man-sized mug, keeping her fingers pressed tight against the pot's leaky lid. Harold waits. He has nothing else to do. The blues dog seems sort of hushed, although heavy, weighing down on his mind feet. The hearty aroma of the recently brewed coffee starts, but fails to make him feel content. He wants the blues dogs to get away from him as he eyes the lady's newly filled cup. When the lady sees that he's not going to get excited and asks for more information, she volunteers the news. "You know the build-to-suit site a block or so south of here?" she emphasizes. "Well, it's going to be a new pool hall, slicked out and brand spanking authentic. Eddie's Billiards, named after the owner, our very own Eddie, will be a welcome community recreation place. I can't wait to try it out. I've always enjoyed a competitive game of pool. How about you?" Harold's interest is bushy eyebrow mild. What should it mean to him, Eddie's Billiards? He's never shot pool. He simply nods and drinks his coffee. He'll check it out when the new place opens. He has a testy job of his own, starting the day after tomorrow. He needs one of her hard massages. Will she come home with him? "Well, I, for one," she says in the face of his disinterest, "think it's time we get something fun happening in the community. There's nothing much to do besides going to the potluck dinners and the Sticks holiday fairs. This will be something to dress up for. Everybody is congratulating Eddie, promising their business, including me." Harold's lack of enthusiasm causes her to feel defensive, but then she doesn't realize how heavy the blues dogs weigh on his mind feet. "I guess we'll find out soon enough," Harold says. "Will you come home with me?" "Of course I will, Harold," she answers sweetly, since he's frowning, provocatively pouting. Days turn into 3 months before Eddie's Billiards opens to the Styx community's fanfare. The atmosphere is crowded and smoky. The curious Styx community folks are all there. They're either smiling and talking, or they're playing pool, or they're moving around, bumping into people, watching others smile, talk, and play pool. Eddie is around saying, "Excuse me," focusing meaningfully so they'll know without a doubt who owns the place, although there has been talk of little else for weeks. There's no booze yet, but Eddie will fix that as soon as he obtains the required license. I'm working on it, he assures the Styx community men, busily drinking coffee and Coca-Colas. Harold props himself up on a high and sturdy stool where he can position his real and mind feet to grab a convenient middle rung. The blues dogs whine in his mind. He forces awareness away with denial of their power over into his wakening reaction. Harold sort of likes Eddie's billiards. There seems to be a genetic pull on him from somewhere in his heart of hearts, and it wants to attach itself to positive reception and power of suggestion. Game after game is reserved on the blackboard chart, and since Harold didn't sign on, he knows he'll just be watching. That doesn't bother him, though, because he doesn't really know how the game is played, and he doesn't want his mediocrity more openly displayed. He might talk to Eddie in private. Maybe he'll teach him how to play. Maybe he's a pool teacher, too. After a while, though, Harold observes what the rules generally are and how the game is won. The thing left to do is to learn the right way to impel the ball. Harold catches sight of one of the community ladies squeezing herself through the crowd of Styx community folks, attempting to make her way over to him. The blues dogs yelp when they sense her approach. She has taken up space on too many mornings when they have been poised and ready to pounce on Harold's mind feet. "I play in 4 matches tonight, Harold. Isn't that great?" she exclaims, reaching him. Her mascara shimmers the same color as her silky blouse. Responding, he says, "Yeah, yeah, that's great. I'll watch you." So she pets his frown until it's her turn on the boards, and then she's gone for the night, tinkling her laugh all over the place, leaving him at the beck and call of the blues dogs. Harold decides to come and talk to Eddie as soon as he opens the next day. A lesson might be expensive, but he knows expenses, and Eddie needs money. But if he refuses to further instruct Harold, maybe there will be somebody around who will. There is, and she's a professional. Harold's been in the pool hall for 15 or 20 minutes, trying to get up the nerve to reveal his purpose to Eddie when she lets herself in. Her car is nearly out of gas, and she's a little dusty. She's also a whole head taller than Harold. Medicine Baker selects the proper cue and asks for Eddie at the same time, intentionally walking in Harold's direction. She sidesteps Harold's nonplussed attitude, instinctively ignoring the delighted attention she's getting. Eddie is rapturously overjoyed to see her, and he swirls her past Harold across the width of the pool hall. They had run and profited many great pool scams together in the past. With all of the obvious excitement going on, Harold wonders if Eddie will introduce her. He doesn't know about any of the wee hour pool shooting and loving they've done together, but something shows, something definitely shows. There are groups of folks in the pool hall besides Harold, but nobody can concentrate on their game with so much of her in the hall, the way she so uniquely is and all, so appealing and double duty. Her rich and full, selfish laugh would bring them all to their knees, given enough exposure. Eventually, Eddie stops usurping Medicine Baker and turns to face Harold and the other open-mouthed Styx folks. "This is Medicine Baker, everybody, from cities far and wide. I warn you, she plays one hell of a game of pool. Beware, she'll beat the pants off you." Everybody looks at their pants. Eddie winks at Medicine Baker before disappearing into the back room. The Styx folks' faces appear expectant, but she only has eyes for a frowning Harold. Medicine Baker bows to all of them good-naturedly. Then all of a sudden, a party vibe takes over the pool hall. "Okay, who's up?" she challenges. Before he can say anything, Medicine Baker points her cue directly at Harold. "How about you?" she asks enticingly. The blues dogs whine. They sense they're losing their space. Harold's tongue feels tied. He can't say anything, temporarily paralyzed by the mediocrity and the blues dog straining to dodge her preposterous force. "Come on," she says, "I'll break." The shiny new balls flail out, scattering separate contests across the expanse of the deep green felt of the table. Harold hesitates, staring at the vibrant colors and skillful leadwork outlined in the Tiffany lamp illuminating the table from above. He studies the lamp, tensely, clearing his throat, silently coaxing his voice to speak. His imagination molds other ball forms, whipping, erratically smashing his confining window panes. It must be working. Styx folks exude auras of interest and enjoyment, playfully happy. They look at Harold. What will he do? By the time her stripe shots are over, Medicine Baker has just about cleared the table. He grunts, acknowledging her skill, and Harold straightens his shoulders. His hands sweat a little when she hands him her specially selected pool cue. He wipes them off on his pants. He has a hard time hearing words of encouragement with her breathing so close to his improving posture. The blues dogs have begun to howl, and Harold closes his brooding eyes for a few seconds, trying to deny their raucous noise. Harold rotates the cue, twisting the chalk back and forth, buying another wisp of time. "Take your best shot," Medicine Baker urges. She affectionately pats his cheek with the long fingers of her svelte hand, and it's like turning on a light switch. Her legs are so shapely, her front is so high, her hair is so maddeningly bright. She is so sure of herself, her figure, her smile, her warmth, her t-shirt. Leaning over the pool table, afraid he'll miss, Harold shifts his position slightly, preparing to make this his first and last pool game, and aims for the corner pocket. He shoots the shot. The ball goes in. Harold can hardly believe it, but he feels unusually calm. He experiences personal power thrust for the first time. A simultaneous attitude of positivity envelops his mind as he triumphantly rises above doubt. He inwardly cheers himself on, and he's not imagining any of it. He has self-confidence and control. The audience of other Styx folks players whisper beginner's luck regarding Harold in his revealing light. Some of them were passionately rooting for Medicine Baker. Medicine Baker stands back, somewhat amazed, as she witnesses the start of Harold's love affair with the elastic ledge. She had planned to stay for a few days and maybe hook up with Eddie. She gets off on lining up sucker bets, like Eddie probably will, but now she thinks she won't waste her time. She intuits that Harold will prove himself better than Eddie, and Eddie is the only one better than her, so far. Harold flourishes without a single miss, and sweeps the solids off the table. At the same time, he asks to sink the mighty eight ball for the pure pleasure of asking. He's become happier after each success, scarcely noticing the lightness on his mind feet. The blues dogs have fitfully removed their rejected weight off of Harold's appendages, slinking to lie by the pool hall door. Medicine Baker holds up Harold's winning arm and shows off his victory to the reluctant cheers from the other Styx folks. The last trace of mediocrity jerks out of him with the good sport recognition, but that's all the extra medicine he gets. She takes off, gliding past him airily, and pushes the door wide open. She brazenly blows him a two-handed kiss and then waves an extravagant goodbye to Eddie when he rushes over to prevent her hasty exit. Eddie knows he can't convince her to stay. She's on to her next con stop on the circuit. Medicine Baker leaves amid many aw-shucks comments from the disappointed Sticks pool players. She claims she'll be back around to challenge any emerging opponents. The Sticks folks gaze at her showy retreat as she goes out the ambitious way she came in, and the Blues dogs shake vigorously and visibly before racing out behind her. And nowadays, that's where Harold can be found, on top of his game, shooting to score every time, the star player in Eddie's billiards. He works less and less outside of the Sticks community since he became somebody good at something. Most of his time is spent encouraging the capriciously dressed ladies to pet his happy face while he perfects sucker bet scams in the pool hall. That's him, with his own style cue, aimed a trifle English on a strategic ball, tapering the waiting pocket, ready and on point. He's a victor, not a victim. He's the best in the Sticks, even Eddie. He wears dress pants and flashes a real multi-carat diamond ring. Harold's gone pro. He calls himself by his pool shark name. It's Corner. The ladies love the handle. They regale him about it, inviting his flattering attentions. His general attitude has morphed into power suave. Maybe his good fortune will rub off on them. They like to think. Who knows? No doubt, Harold has arrived. Winner takes all. He believes. His balls are in his corner. So if the shoe fits, turn the frown upside down. Seize your changing moment. Corner, front, and center. This is Pat. Onwards.